Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time it is, wherever you are in this glorious, amazing, floating blue orb we call home. I'm Malcolm Hawker. I'm the host of the CDO Matters podcast. Thank you for joining. Happy 2025. Woohoo! I would, whatever the, you know, it's the third week of January by the time you're watching this, or maybe even later than that. Who knows? You could be watching this in the middle of April. You could be watching this in the year 2030. I don't know. I'm recording this in 2024, so it's not quite 2025 yet for me, but it will be shortly. And we're going to talk about 2025 today. But hey, let's talk about the elephant in the room, shall we? If you are a longtime subscriber or listener or viewer on the YouTubes of the CDO Matters podcast, you'll notice, hey, there's something different about this. Yes, indeed, folks. Welcome to 2025 and welcome to the modern age of the CDO Matters podcast, where I officially can have a virtual background on my recording platform. Because I'm trying a new recording platform. I'm trying something called StreamYard, and we're migrating off an old platform called Goldcast that didn't allow virtual backgrounds. So if you're watching me on YouTube, I've got a story to tell. I've got a story to tell regardless of where you're watching or listening. And if you're just listening, well, my apologies, because some of this will be your visual reference and appropriate only for the fine folks who are watching on YouTube. But if you're a long-term listener of the podcast, going back to like the first 10 episodes, if you are, thank you. You have strength and courage. But if you are a long-time listener, subscriber, and you go back to some of the earlier episodes, you will have seen me trying to use a neon sign in my background. And for a couple episodes, it actually kind of worked. I duct taped and bubblegummed a solution together. But to make a long story very short, when I convinced my amazing boss, Reed Gusmus, in one of his, I'm sure, bigger moments of weakness to let us do this podcast, I convinced him to let me buy a neon sign because I was convinced you needed a neon sign to be a legit podcaster. This is in 2022. That's crazy. We started this in 2022. I can't believe those words just came out of my mouth. It's 2025, and we started this podcast in 2022, where I bought this really goofy neon sign that you now see behind me. As it turns out, to make a long story very short, it's not a real neon sign. It's an LED light, and LED emits light like an animation. Like, it's basically a flash. It's a flicker. It doesn't emit light constantly. It's on, off, on, off, on, off. It has this neon, this LED light has what is, in essence, called the frame rate. So do cameras. Digital cameras, like this one right in front of my face right now, is not actually capturing every moment of every second. It's on, off, on, off. It's basically like an animation. Kind of crazy. It has a frame rate. And if the frame rate of the camera is not the same frame rate of the neon light, well, then it creates this weird flicker. And you may have, maybe you've done this when you've had LED lights in the background and you're on Zoom or you're on WebEx or whatever, and you look at your camera, you're like, there's something is not right here. It's the LED light. Or maybe you've got an LED overhead light and it just makes your video go goofy. It's because of this issue of frame rates. And to make a long story very short, I spent, well, Truth in Advertising, my company, spent a decent chunk of change on this sign and I couldn't make it work. I could not make it work. The only thing I could do was to take a photograph of it and then put a photograph into a virtual background and make it look like there's a sign hanging behind me, which you see now. If you're on YouTube, if you're just listening as you're on the elliptical, or if you're jogging, or if you're driving, and you're like, what is this guy talking about? But if you saw me on YouTube right now, you'd see that there is this sign, and it's a photograph. And it honestly works out really, really well. a lot of people actually think it's a real sign. So the virtual background works, except in my recording platform for CDO Matters, I wasn't unable to have a virtual background until today. Ta-da! I have my sign. I'm tickled that I finally have my sign on my podcast. Woohoo! It's going to be a good episode, folks. It's going to be a good episode. Buckle your seatbelts. Gird your pipelines, because today we are going to talk about 2025 predictions. In 2024, my predictions episode was one of the most watched and listened to, so I expect the same to be true this year. I love doing these things, and it appears that you like watching and listening to them as well. So it's a win-win. Yay. A couple of weeks ago, I did a 2024 retrospective, so I would invite you to check that out. Just me looking back on 2024. This one is me looking forward on 2025. I'll share a few of my high-level insights. I'll start with a review of what I think are some of the bigger macro forces that are at play. And I'll end with a couple of long shots. I like the long shots. My long shots last year, I mean, they were way off. If you want to see how I did, or you want to listen to how I did, I reviewed myself. I rate myself. Like, I'm like, of all the predictions I made last year, if you go back a couple of weeks, I think it's two episodes now. Let me double check. I should double check. That would have been published on Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, or maybe the week after. I'm not entirely sure about our vacation schedule. But anyway, yes, it would have been two episodes ago. It would have been episode 66, where I rate my performance on my 2024 predictions. What I got right, what I got wrong. My long shots, I got wrong. But that's okay, because they're long shots. They're long shots. But I think most I was pretty right about. A couple I missed. For sure I missed. But let's get into it. What is 2025 going to look like? What are some of the things you're going to hear if you go to data and analytics conferences? What are you going to see and hear on LinkedIn? And on and on. Let's start at the top. Let's start at like some of the macro forces. This is an area that I actually kind of got wrong last year, because I thought that 2024 was economically going to be a pretty good year for most. I thought that the wars couldn't persist as long as they were persisting. I thought that interest rates couldn't persist as long as they were persisting. I didn't think that high prices would persist as long as they did. And I was quite convinced that 2024 was going to be a reasonably good year. It wasn't. It held steady for the first part of the year. And then towards the end of the year, things got a little rocky, I think, for a lot of folks, particularly over in Europe. I think 2025 will be a very strong year for the data and analytics space. Generally speaking, we'll talk about some of the exceptions to the strength in data and analytics. But I think from a vendor perspective, from a software perspective, for a demand for our services perspective, I think it is going to be a good year. I think that there will be some general optimism going into 2025. I think there will be a renewed focus on spending in 2025. This is particularly the case in the United States. I think the United States is well positioned to have a great year in 2025. I do believe that Canada will lag, and I do believe that Europe will lag. The rest of the world, I think, will also lag a little bit, but most of our listeners and viewers are in North America and Canada, and USA and Canada, and in Europe. I do think that towards the second half of the year in Canada, our friends to the north will begin to catch up from an economic optimism perspective. Whether or not, Prime Minister Trudeau actually pushes the election all the way in October, I doubt he will. I think the NDP are going to force his hand before then. And I think that will actually probably be a good thing, because I am optimistic that the iron fist of the Trudeau regime will end in 2025 in Canada. Yes, I just expressed a political viewpoint. But I think that there's been some really, really difficult stuff economically over the last few years, particularly increasingly, large debt levels in Canada. This is true for all developed countries. But it's been a real problem, I think, in Canada, and it's been having an outsized effect on the economy. And I think in 2025, the Canadian economy will improve. I think the U.S. economy most certainly will improve. There will be a renewed sense of optimism. There will be renewed spending. I think it'll be a good time to be a vendor. I think it'll be a good time to be a consultant. First half of the year won't be that way for Canada. I think things will continue to lag. But towards the end of the year, as we get clarity around when the election will be called, as we get clarity around things like the renewal of the Keystone XL pipeline, say whatever you want about the environmental impacts there, which I'm sure are a viable concern. I do think it'll be a great time to be an Albertan in 2025 because of Keystone, because of some of the political changes that we're seeing in the U.S. In Europe, however, I think things will continue to lag. There will be the year is starting with a lot of uncertainty. These wars are still going strong. Wars in Europe and war on Europe's back door in the Middle East. And I'm not optimistic that things there will change very quickly. So I'm concerned about, you know, lagging performance in Europe through the year. I'll be there in March, in February. I'll be in Amsterdam in February. I'll be there in London in March. And I'll get a sense for what's going on. I'll be there in May for Gartner in London again. So I'll be in Europe at least three times in the first half of next year, and I'm interested to see kind of what's going on and get a feel for how things are unfolding. But I'm quite optimistic from a macro perspective about what is happening in 2025. I do have a list that I'm keeping, so forgive me if we're on the YouTubes and you see my eyes wander over to my list. I did actually spend some time to write some of my thoughts down, which is abnormal. For me, believe it or not, usually I'm just riffing. Usually I'm just going straight from the top of my old noggin. But I did want to write some of these things down, make sure that I don't miss anything. So I think economically, at a high level, I think I'm optimistic about 2025. Now, of course, your mileage will vary. Some industries will be better off than other industries. If you are into crypto, like I am, you're going to have a good year. It's going to be a good year for the crypto bros like me. If you're into oil and gas, I think you're going to have a good year. I think there's a lot of things to be optimistic about, especially in the U.S. I'll end it with that. All right, what else is going on? Oh, macro. Let's start to talk about kind of the data and analytics world writ large. I think that 2025 will continue to be a difficult year for CDOs. And I say that with an extremely heavy heart, because, folks, my mission, we exist. This podcast exists. I'm sharing this. I'm doing all this with the goal of helping CDOs extend their tenure. This is my goal. This is my North Star. So to say that I see CDOs continuing to struggle in 2025 is not said lightly and is not something I say because I really want to. I don't want to say that, but I think it to be true. I'm seeing a lot of CDOs continue to struggle. I'm seeing things like AI functions being stripped away from CDOs. I see a lot of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. I see a lot of apprehension. I see a lot of CDOs focusing on all the wrong things. I see a lot of CDOs continue to avoid building any sort of quantifiable metrics around the value they deliver to their organizations. I see a lot of organizations getting frustrated with a lack of traction around AI, around being able to operationalize AI at scale. And I see a lot of businesses doing it on their own without the support of CDOs. That's a bad sign for CDOs. If you are one of the 75 to 80% of companies that is using GenAI solutions day in and day out, you've gone ahead. You didn't want to wait. You didn't want to wait for clarity on governance guidelines. You didn't want to wait for customized GenAI solutions, of which only 5% of you are doing. And so companies are using GenAI solutions. They're using them extensively in marketing. They're using them in HR. They're using them in development, engineering, you name it, procurement. They're using GenAI solutions. So, I mean, these solutions are being adopted, and they're being adopted with or without the support of CDO organizations. And I think if there was one thing that is holding CDOs back, it is also the one thing that has the greatest potential to propel them. And that is the operationalizing, integrating, implementing, pick your word, GenAI into the workflows of their organizations. Most are not supporting that. Most organizations are just going and DIYing it. I can hear many of you saying this is a recipe for disaster. It might be, right? It might be. There may be, and I'm not predicting this for 2025, but there may be companies out there that run into problems because of, you know, lax governance over the usage of Gen AI-based solutions in their organizations. I'm sure it's going to happen, right? I'm sure there are companies out there that are exposing intellectual property. I'm sure that there are companies that are doing, and people that are doing things that are not advisable in terms of using off-the-shelf, commercially available Gen AI solutions, but they're doing them because they're driving productivity increases. Productivity is enhancing. I don't know a software engineer that isn't using a copilot. I don't know anybody in the marketing that isn't using a copilot. And on and on. These solutions are being adopted because they drive productivity. The CDO opportunity has been for the last 2 years to find a way to integrate themselves into being the service provider for Gen AI-based solutions, for doing things like implementing more complex RAG patterns where you can start to actually leverage some of your internal data to turbocharge the behavior of some of these solutions and make them more accurate and consistent and trustworthy. But so many CDOs have failed to answer that call. It's in the data. We see it in the data. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that we still have many CDOs out there who are saying things like, well, I got to focus on foundations. Well, that's great. But if you focus on the foundations that have historically excluded unstructured data from the scope of your governance program, from your data management programs, you're probably missing the mark, because that's what Gen AI-based solutions are basically running on and optimized by, is unstructured data, text. So if you're one of the CDOs who is talking about focusing on foundations but not focusing on unstructured data, you're putting yourself in a precarious spot. If you're one of the CDOs who's saying you need more time to figure it all out, you're putting yourself in a precarious spot. If you're one of the CDOs that is focused on taking a framework-driven approach to understanding Gen AI without figuring out how to operationalize it, you're putting yourself in a precarious spot. Many CDOs are choosing the latter in all of these examples that I'm giving. Yes, there are concerns about Gen AI. Yes, it hallucinates. Yes, we need to get our hands around this. Yes, we also need to focus on our foundations. But too much of a focus on foundations and not enough on a focus on implementation and execution and customer support when it comes to implementing Gen AI is what will cause the number of CDOs to continue to recede in 2025. We saw that in 2024. The overall count of CDO remains high because so many government agencies, particularly in the United States, are implementing CDOs. So overall, the numbers look good, and overall, the numbers are relatively high. But I would argue that in the private sector, CDOs are losing ground. And they're losing ground for all the reasons that I just shared. I don't say this lightly, and I say this with a very, very heavy heart. I'm here to help. I don't want there to be fewer CDOs in 2025, but I do think that this is going to be a very, very common theme throughout the year. Well, what else? I do think, oddly, as transformative as AI is, as widely as it is being adopted, particularly Gen AI, as it becomes deeply embedded into the operating processes of our businesses, I do think that in 2025, through the lens of data and AI, through the lens of the CDO organization, we'll hear people talk less about AI. This is, yes, a little bit of a paradox. I think we're going to be hearing less of people talk about how to do things like RAG, right? I think we're going to hear people talk less about how to operationalize AI. I think we're barely going to hear a peep around the idea of being AI ready. That was a common theme over the last 2 years, particularly 2 years ago, immediately following the launch of ChatGPT. Everybody was talking about being AI ready, but I think in 2025, you're not going to hear many people talking about being AI ready at all, at all. And I think, frankly, and unfortunately, that's a result of so many data organizations really not being able to figure out how to find the balance between the focus on foundations and getting stuff done. And for many, it's just going to cause a paralysis. For many, it's just going to cause this, okay, well, you know what? My organization is deploying Gen AI. They're doing it. They're doing it in marketing. They're doing it in HR. They're doing it in procurement. They're doing it in engineering. I'll just let them keep doing what they're doing. Maybe things break and maybe I'll be asked to help clean it up. But in terms of me pushing, me being on the offensive related to Gen AI, some will, but I suspect most will not. Unfortunately, again, I don't say this lightly and I don't want to say this, but this is something that I'm going to see for 2025. There'll be a little bit of a pullback. There'll be a little bit of a pullback from kind of beating the AI drum from within data and analytics organizations, at least insofar as it comes to enabling AI for the rest of the organization. That's something I think we're going to see. What else? I'm looking at my handy dandy list. Meanwhile, when it comes to AI, I do think that we'll see more and more and more capabilities that are included into data governance and data management solutions. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in some of the more specific trends that I go into. So there is a little bit slightly of a paradox here. We'll be talking less about AI from the perspectives of the products or solutions that we as data practitioners offer to our customers. We'll be talking less about that. But I think internally, when we pull back, we will be talking more about AI to improve data management and data governance. So there's a little bit of a paradox there. But I think it, instead of how do I help externally, how do I be externally focused and customer focused around AI, I think the focus will be how do I use it for me? How do I improve stuff internally? That, I do think there will be a common trend there in 2025. All right, let's dive into some very specific trends. After I have a sip of lovely water. By the way, if you're on YouTube and you're on a desktop and you have the ability to comment, let me know how this video is and the audio is. Hopefully it's better. It's supposed to be better. I don't know. Of course, there's the amazing sign, right? Specific trends for 2025. This is the Malcolm Hawker hype cycle. That's a trademarked phrase from my old employer. I guess I can't say that. It's the what would be appropriate, not the hype cycle, the popularity cycle, maybe. I don't know. Trends. Top trends 2025 by Moa. In the first half of the year, I see the popularity of data catalogs waning slightly. I think that over the last 2 years, of all of the software solutions in the space, I would argue data catalogs have had kind of their moment in the sun. Data catalogs, I would argue, for the last 2 years have been kind of the main focus from a software perspective within the broader data and analytics space. I can't think of any other software solution that's had more attention, of course, other than just AI, you know, high-level AI. But has it been a focus on MDM? No. Data quality, practically non-existent, as important as it is. Haven't had anybody really talking about like AI, DQ software, innovations in DQ software, even though there was a new magic quadrant last year. It's been data catalogs. They have been kind of sucking up all the oxygen in the software world related to data management. And I see that losing a little bit of steam in the first half of the year. I think that's just kind of a natural thing, because I honestly think that a lot of companies will have a bit of a hangover. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that a lot of companies over the last 2 years have invested in data catalogs. And a lot of those companies did it, many of them did it, tied to some idea of a data mesh, which is like gone, by the way. Like RIP data mesh, sorry. But a lot of companies implemented a data catalog tied to a failed data mesh initiative, or an extremely stripped down, de-scoped data mesh initiative, where the only things that survived were data catalogs and maybe some idea of a data product. And a lot of companies spent a lot of money on this over the last couple of years. And I think there'll be a hangover the first half of the year, because these companies will be looking for value, expecting value, and instead what they'll get is a list of data assets in a catalog that end users find overly cumbersome, difficult to use, and not really helping very much. You know, I think a lot of companies will be struggling with the classic data catalog conundrum, which is, if I build it, why don't they come? Right? And they don't come because when they log in and search on customer, what they see is a list of 4,000 things related to customer that aren't relevant to the task at hand, that aren't relevant to the thing that end user is trying to do. Maybe build a customer 360 report. I search on customer in the catalog. I see 400 things. I don't know what to do. Like that's kind of, to me, that's the classic data catalog conundrum that I used to hear all the time when I was an analyst. And I think that a lot of the companies who had these big grandiose ideas about data products, the data mesh, data catalogs, deployed a data catalog without a reasonable focus on governance, without a reasonable focus, most certainly on product management and building amazing, great products that solve customer problems. They rush to get catalogs out. They have, in essence, what could be called a cheesecake factory style menu of hundreds of pages of data assets that are difficult to decipher, difficult to understand. And that's the hangover, which is, hey, you told me this data product thing is going to help, you know, save the planet and make my life easier and is going to do all of these things and angels will sing. And I'm looking at this list of, you know, 500 customer master records, right? Or different versions of customer, or different tables of customer, different whatever. But I'm an end user. I don't even know what a table is, right? So I think the first half of the year for data catalogs will be a bit of a hangover. However, to the rescue. The second half of the year, I believe, I don't think this is a long shot. He's been saying this. He's been telegraphing it on LinkedIn. I think my friend Ole Olsen Bagno will publish his book. I think it's his third, which is amazing, by the way. He'll publish his book called The Metagrid. And I think it will renew some of the fervor around data catalogs. And the Phoenix will rise from the ashes. And once again, towards the second half of the year, I suspect maybe around the Q4 timeframe, maybe fall Q4, who knows, around there, the data catalog movement will refresh itself because of this idea of the metagrid that I don't have full grasp around just yet. I look forward to reading Ole's book, where he's talking about these repositories of metadata just kind of naturally being already around the organization, and we just need to go find them, and we need to make this grid. I think that's what he means by the grid. There's this metadata all over the place. It's in transactional systems. It's in other systems designed to carry metadata, like maybe a CMDB, configuration management database, or a project management or a workflow system. The other systems, all outside the data and analytics world, that are managing metadata, which is very true, by the way. And I think his metagrid concept finds a way to unify all of these things and to make sense of them from the perspective of managing the data, and maybe even what Gartner would call activating the metadata, perhaps. I don't know what is the entire premise of the metagrid. I just described some of it, but I do know that this world is very prone. What I mean by world, that this world, our world, our beloved world of data and analytics, is prone to hype. And I think the metagrid will be our hype for 2025. It will be the new data mesh for 2025. And everybody will jump on the bandwagon. And once again, data catalogs will be the thing. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a believer. Not necessarily metagrid. I reserve the right to read the book and to see what Ole has to say about his grid. But data catalogs are foundational. We can't avoid data catalogs. I'm a huge fan of data catalogs. And this does bring me to kind of trend number three. Trend number one was data catalogs losing steam, on the verge of falling off the hype cycle. But second half of the year, they resurrect themselves. This is trend number two. Data catalogs rise again, and they all become very popular because of this new book. And number three trend will help to buttress the idea of the data catalog being important. And this idea is something I've been talking about recently, but it is the resurgence. Is that the right word? I don't know. It is the rise of awareness. It is the increased awareness of the importance of semantics, ontologies, taxonomies, what I would just loosely call, but this is a well-established space, knowledge management. So thankfully, there is increasing awareness that knowledge management is what we will need in a Gen AI-driven future state. And I've posted about this many times on LinkedIn. I will continue to do this. We as data practitioners need to make a slow pivot And this isn't away from, this is also towards. So it's not a choice. It's not a binary. I'm giving this up to go over here. Today we manage data. Tomorrow we need to manage data and knowledge. Right? So a useful tool here, folks, is this something called the DIKW framework, data, information, knowledge, wisdom. Data plus context is equal to information. Information, when applied in a real world to solve a specific problem, is knowledge. Okay? The ability to apply information to solve a problem is knowledge. We apply knowledge every day. We use knowledge every day. You and I use knowledge every day, and we use it in organizations as well. Knowledge management is basically the management of, let's just call them narratives, stories. Maybe this, and there are those in the knowledge management world that may be listening to this and shaking their fists like, no. Please make a comment about how I'm wrong. But knowledge management to me is the management of context. It's the management of narratives. It's the management of stories. It's the management of information plus context plus how to apply it, what to do in what situations, right? That's knowledge. If it rains, open the umbrella, right? Knowledge. These things, knowledge management, this stuff, knowledge management, is needed in a world of Gen AI. Gen AI is built on and optimized by text, stories, narratives. Prompts are narratives. And we need to evolve our data management capabilities and our data and analytics functions to incorporate the idea of knowledge. I do believe that the data catalog will be ground zero for doing all of this. Now, maybe it's not the data catalog that we know today. I talked about this on a Catalogs and Cocktails podcast with my beloved friends, Tim and Juan, Tim Gasper, Juan Cicada. And if you haven't checked that episode out, you probably should. It was awesome talking about next-gen data catalogs, where I'm talking about how knowledge management gets incorporated into data catalogs, where we build a bridge between data management and knowledge management. Right? That bridge is in essence semantics, I think. And it's the ability to profile and classify text into structured formats. So our classic data and analytics systems can consume and govern and manage and apply data quality to things in highly structured formats that were previously in unstructured formats. So the bridge of these two worlds, I think, is going to happen in a data catalog. So data catalogs, don't get me wrong. And I'd love to see if Ole is talking about this, but data catalogs will be the bridge, I believe. Or at the very least, they'll be the interface for the output of this bridge. And maybe that bridge is the data fabric. I don't know. And the bridge that I'm talking about here is going from unstructured data, video, text, files, semi-structured data, HTML, others, XML. Going from that world to more structure. Once we get the data in a structured format, then we can apply some of the consistent legacy approaches to governing and managing the data and even dropping it into analytics platforms. So I think the data catalog is relevant, and this increasing awareness is trend number three. This increasing awareness that we need to expand the scope of our governance efforts and our quality efforts and all of our data management efforts into this whole other world that largely has been independent. Of the data and analytics function. So I'm excited about that. If I had a bag of money, and if I was an investor, if I was a VC, that thing, whatever I just described, call it a data catalog, if you will. I'm not entirely sure that's correct. But what I just described, the bridge between these worlds, that's where I'd be investing, because there is so much gold there. It's just interesting, I'm reading a book from the godfather of the data warehouse, Mr. Bill Inman. His book is called Turning Text into Gold. It's a short read, and it's all about how to, you know, classify data, put data into ontological structures. Something that Graph kind of does pretty well, puts things into triples that could arguably be used to help classify as well. But figuring that out at scale, maybe AI can do it, maybe it can't, I don't know. I think it can, quite certain it can. But there's a whole world here we need to figure out. That's trend number three. Trend number four, is the increasing use of AI to manage data. So I know I said earlier that AI will kind of lose some of its luster, and I do believe this to be true, at least insofar as us pushing it within our organization. But I do think that we will increasingly see not just the value, but the need to better leverage AI to manage data. I think we'll see more people embrace the idea of using AI for things like data modeling, or even using AI to, yes, classify data. My friend Bill Inman would say that's not possible or trustworthy at the very least. But I think it's the only way that we're going to get our hands around all of the data we have, and to do that in a way that is repeatable and governable and manageable, we're going to have to use AI to help with that, because most of the data out there is just not governed. It's just not. 80% of our data is just not. It's sitting, you know, basically collecting digital dust in servers within the cloud, within all of these massive data centers. So we need AI to help us. We need AI to be more adaptable in our governance processes. Processes. And I think that we will see across the board, whether that's MDM, data quality, data management, data integration, AI will continue to be integrated. But I'm most excited about AI and its integration into this whole world to help us build a bridge between unstructured data and structured data, or vice versa. So that's trend number four, increasing use of AI within data management, data governance solutions. Yeah, it's a bit of a layup, but I think it's inevitable and extremely, extremely necessary. Number five, data products. Oh, here's another one with a very heavy heart. I am a huge believer, but I still think that 2025 will be the last year we hear anybody talking a lot about data products. I say that with a lot of kind of sorrow and a lot of grief, because I am a believer of data product management. I'm a believer of product management, but we will hear less and less people talking about data products in 2025 because they didn't focus enough on product management, because they didn't focus on building amazing products, because they didn't focus on building business cases for all their initiatives, because they can't understand how much it costs to build a product or the value that that product is delivering. They're not focused enough on user-centric design, right? These are things that a good product manager would do. So it's not too late. Go hire one if you want. Go hire one. You should. These are things a good product manager would help and would help you to make great products. And had you done that, then I don't think data products would necessarily die in the vine. But so many of us are focused on data products as more of a raw ingredient. And if you want to understand what I mean by a raw ingredient, check out episode number 62, Data Products Demystified. I will tell you, I go into great detail around the world of data products. And so many of us, there was a great opportunity there. There remains a great opportunity, by the way. There remains a great opportunity, but so many of us did not focus on the product management aspects here, or sufficiently on the product management aspects. So in 2025, we will hear less and less about data products, sadly. Number six, data fabric. Yes, data fabric will continue to slowly chugga, gain speed. In part, this will be due to continued investments by Microsoft, who is head and shoulders above everybody else in terms of their data fabric. I think you will see other major infrastructure providers also talk about fabrics and maybe even implement their own, maybe like a Snowflake or an Amazon or a Databricks, maybe. But data fabric will continue to build steam. I think what we will see is companies like Microsoft understand the role that unstructured data will play in our future and will be doing increasingly interesting things through their fabric to enable data and analytics professionals, data pipeline people, data managers, data scientists to access that unstructured data in ways that are actionable, right? I think you will see more and more focus of unstructured data as a source into data fabrics, right? Where I could run a Spark job on unstructured data if I wanted to, or I could do a data profile on unstructured data, maybe even do that through like a Purview, a data catalog from Microsoft, maybe. That's an interesting, Microsoft has got an interesting, and any data fabric provider, you know, are arguably all of the hyperscalers have the ability to start doing some of this stuff. And it's really, really, really interesting. We're pulling all these worlds together through a single operational pane. that single operational pane is the data fabric. Those of you out there who are acolytes of decentralization and assume that all centralization is bad, well, it's not. It's not. Hubs and spokes exist for a reason. So if you want to say data fabric is bad because it's centralized, there are economies of scale that are enabled through centralizations that are simply untenable or undeliverable. You can't do in peer-to-peer networks like a data mesh. Anywho, data fabric will continue to be on a slow boil. It's going to continue along and it's going to continue along and more people will be implementing and more people will be implementing. They'll see the value of the single operational plane. They will see the value of being able to run SQL queries against anything, anywhere. They'll see the value of being able to access unstructured data from within SharePoint sites, from within their Dynamics infrastructures, being able to pull operational data, analytical data, unstructured data, and pull it into a single place and apply common methodologies, common pipelines, common processes, common rules from within one place. I just see the fabric becoming more and more ubiquitous for all the reasons I just stated. Meanwhile, MDM, as awesome as the fabric is, it will continue to be focused primarily, I would argue exclusively, on analytical workloads. And MDM will remain the only thing that lives in a fabric that is actually talking about pushing data back into operational systems like CRMs and ERPs, right? So MDM will remain as relevant as it's ever been, arguably even more so in 2025. Number seven, AI governance. AI governance will be continued to be the thing that most people are talking, or not most, but many people are talking about at data and analytics conferences in 2025. So it will be the thing that everybody's talking about, but it'll also be the one thing that people are generally unable to completely and totally articulate, at least from an operations perspective, right? There's a lot of companies out there. There's a lot of thought leaders. There's a lot of people that have built AI governance frameworks. Hey, that's great. Frameworks are a great place to start. How do I operationalize AI ethics? As a data and analytics practitioner who's responsible for managing data, how do I make sure that the data that I'm exposing to my data scientists is ethical? What rules do I apply against that data? How do I define those rules? How do I execute those rules at scale? Do you hear the crickets? Yes, you do, because I have yet to hear anybody come up with a compelling answer to any of those questions. I'm not trying to be overly negative. I'm just saying this is an incredibly hard problem to solve. Incredibly hard. So yes, AI governance will be a top focus of 2025. Everybody's going to be talking about it. But you, as the CDO, you as the data practitioner, you as the VP of data and analytics, you need to start asking some hard questions around, how do I actually implement this? How do I implement this? I don't have the answers here. I don't have all the answers here. But as an industry, we need to be asking more of these questions. We can't just be waving around frameworks and claiming mission accomplished. Because we all know that's not how things work. When it comes to governance, this is about defining rules and executing and implementing them. And until I can implement a rule that says this is how an ethical data collection process runs, this is how an ethical data governance process runs, this is how an ethical data pipeline runs, this is how I can ethically source the data, here are the behaviors and attributes of ethical data, here are the attributes of unethical data. Until I can quantify that, And maybe you figured this out. If you have, please put something in the comments, DM me on LinkedIn, you throw a virtual shoe at your TV screen right now, and tell me how you've solved for that. Because I don't know, I don't think anybody has any answers to these questions. So just beware. You're sitting at a conference and you're hearing people talk about AI governance like it's a solved problem. Nope. It's not. It's not. As I said before, a lot of the data that we're going to need to turbocharge Gen AI based efforts is completely and totally ungoverned. And we got to get our hands around it. We got to get our hands around it. And just saying, I've got a framework, it's not cutting it. Number eight. Well, again, I say this with a heavy heart, sustainability. Sustainability from a data perspective will largely fall off the map in the United States in 2025, sadly. On the bright side, our friends in Europe will continue to focus on it. Things like the digital product passport will continue to gain speed in Europe because of EU regulations related to sustainability. I suspect more and more CDOs in Europe will be given sustainability targets. That's a challenge and it's an opportunity. So Europe, thank you from a sustainability perspective. The planet thanks you. You got a lot to figure out in 2025. If your CDO is given a sustainability target, if you are trying to figure out how to be more energy efficient, if you are trying to figure out how to reduce your data center costs, your data center footprints from all this dark data that is just sitting and collecting dust, not being used, massive opportunity, but also a massive challenge. How to integrate sustainability into your data governance programs, how to integrate audits, and on and on. Huge opportunities in Europe. Don't think that's just going to have much focus in 2025 in the United States. I just don't see it. Canada will be probably somewhere in between, as we usually are. All right, time for my long shots. Long shots. I've got a couple. I couldn't think of any really compelling ones, and I thought about it a reasonably long time. Last year's long shots were related to quantum computing and how quantum computing was going to like break encryption, which I still think it will, by the way. FYI, I think it will. But what are some of the long shots? I see a couple, and these aren't really maybe not even that long. And by the way, I have no insider information here. I'm just a guy making a podcast in Florida. So no inside information. This is not investment advice. Go talk to an investment advisor. Don't take it my word for it because I don't know what I'm talking about. Because both of these actually could have financial implications, I suspect. One, I think Informatica will be sold. I think Salesforce will come back once the kind of the regulatory environment becomes a little more favorable to merger and acquisition activity in the beginning of the year. And as Informatica continues to struggle, which they are, I think they will be sold and I think it'll be to Salesforce. I think Salesforce will come back and I think that deal will be consummated. I'm guessing, it's my long shot, it's a guess. But if I were a betting man, and I am, that would be a long shot that I would most certainly be comfortable betting on. And probably be able to get some pretty decent odds on it as well. But I think Informatica will be sold. Long shot number two. And this one isn't that hard to see because this is very common. I do think that there will be some consolidation in the data catalog space. I think that Alation, Calibra, and even Atlan, which is kind of on the periphery of data catalogs, they're a bit of a different play. But I think one of those three or one of their competitors, that there will be some consolidation there. One or more of them will combine or be bought by somebody else because of all the focus in the data catalog space. A lot, or maybe even some of the extremely smaller providers, Stardog, others, some of the startups, the data catalog startups that exploded after the data mesh went haywire, I think those will certainly be gobbled up. But I think some of the bigger players, and I'm thinking Calibra, that there will be some activity from an M&A perspective next year from a bigger provider that is kind of on the outside looking in, who sees the value of data catalog, who sees all the things that I was talking about earlier as the catalog potentially being the bridge of all these worlds, potentially becoming what Gartner would call a data and analytics governance platform, that sees the tight interconnection between catalogs and fabrics and sees the growth of both. I think that's something that we can probably bet on in 2025. So long shots, they're long shots. With that, I will leave you, my dear data and analytics friends. Happy 2025. It's going to be a good year. I'm telling you, it's going to be a good year. I look forward to seeing you on the road in 2025. I'm as usual, I'm always traveling and I really hope I get a chance to run into you in person. If we do, let's have a chat. Let's have a beverage. Let's talk about data. Let's build a community. Let's fortify our community. That's what I'm here to do. And I'm here to help. I hope you have a wonderful year. I hope you tune into another episode of the CDO Matters podcast or go back to some of our old episodes. That would be awesome. And if you haven't subscribed, hey, it doesn't cost anything. Go ahead and subscribe on your podcast provider of choice. I will see you again in another episode of this podcast sometime very soon. Thanks, everybody. Happy New Year, all.